hearing of submissions, and at this stage we're scheduled to hear from the Scobie Family Trust. And I noticed the next submitted TUZ grain product was almost identical, so I presume you'll be presenting jointly?
Yes, please, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, now we've read all of the pre-circulated material, so your four tranches of evidence plus the original submission, so you don't need to reread that to us. I see your table something, you just want to lead us through that? And then we'll
yes, please.
See if we have questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll just introduce Corey Hodges to my right, who's here representing TNZ Grain Products Limited. And beside Corey is Pam York from Scobie Family Trust. Thank you. TNZ and Scobies are involved in the peat mining industry in Southland. Their submissions were focused on the wetland provisions of the proposed plan. Neither of the submitters opposed regulation of wetland modification in those submissions. Their submissions did seek and support changes to Rule 74 that would make modification of a wetland other than a regionally significant wetland a discretionary activity. They also sought the addition of a new policy providing recognition that wetland modification may be appropriate in certain circumstances. In my opinion, the modification of wetlands should be regulated under the proposed plan, but as outlined in my evidence, I think the rule should regulate some forms of wetland modification as discretionary. And in Appendix 1 of my evidence, I provided an amended Rule 74 consistent with the matters discussed in my evidence. As noted in my client's submissions, not all wetlands in Southland contain the same values. Some are unmodified and others highly modified. Artificial or constructed wetlands are also present, and construction of new wetlands is likely to increase given the policy direction of the proposed plan and the benefits those constructed wetlands can provide. Areas of natural wetland have been greatly reduced in Southland as land development has occurred. However, there are still many permanently or intermittently wet areas that meet the plan definition of wetland. In my experience, there are often situations where modification of these areas may be required or proposed beyond the scenarios identified in Rule 74A and B. This can include modification associated with large-scale infrastructure projects through to smaller-scale on-farm works. The plan, as notified, adopts a position whereby any wetland modification, other than the exemptions of Rule 74A and B, is not generally anticipated by the plan. So what I'm meaning there is that it regards them as non-complying activities. Policy 33 provides policy direction on wetland modification and aims to prevent the reduction in area, function and quality of wetlands, including through drainage and vegetation removal. The words prevent the reduction in area provide relatively strong policy direction where activities proposing wetland modification are proposed. And I interpret those words as meaning no reduction in areas of wetland. Non-complying activity status is generally used in a regional plan for situations where it is intended that resource consents only be granted in exceptional circumstances. In my opinion, wetland modification is likely to be proposed in many unexceptional circumstances over the lifetime of the proposed plan. Submitters also sought addition of a new wetland policy, which is linked to the requested changes to Rule 74. And provide some balance in relation to wetland modification at a policy level. Policy 33A, as suggested by the submitter, seeks to recognise that modification of wetland not identified as regionally significant may be appropriate where adverse effects can be avoided, remedied or mitigated. The suggested policy and changes to Rule 74 provide an out where the adverse environmental effects of wetland modification are not deemed significant. As noted above, the wording of Policy 33 aims to prevent a reduction in wetland area. In some situations, a proposal may also have positive effects on the natural or physical environment, and the changes would also allow better recognition of these situations. Discretionary activity status still provides Council with full discretion to consider actual potential adverse environmental effects of wetland modification and any other relevant matters, and also to consider any positive effects. If justified, an ecological assessment or other expert reports could be requested through resource consent processing. It allows the Council to consider applications of a differing scale and environmental effects without lumping most wetland modification into a non-complying status. Discretionary activity status provides recognition that issues around wetlands and wetland modification are not clear-cut. In my opinion, the changes sought are more likely to achieve better environmental outcomes and provide flexibility for all parties involved in a resource consent process, including applicants, council and affected parties. The suggested changes to Rule 74 would still regulate wetland modification, but recognises that given the range of wetland types present in Southland, modification may be appropriate in certain circumstances. The Tutorial example provided in the further submission of Scobie's Family Trust details a situation where discretionary activity status could possibly achieve a better environmental outcome. Mrs. York will talk to that briefly in a minute. Just to sum up, a change to discretionary activity status in addition of the suggested policy would still enable the Council in undertaking its functions under the Act to recognise and provide for the relevant matters of national importance. It would also enable the Council to manage water in an integrated and sustainable way as required under the NDS and in a manner consistent with the policy direction of the proposed plan. So thank you, Mr. Chair. That's just an overview of my evidence. Yep. I'm happy to take questions now. I could pass briefly to...
I think we'll hear from the rest of the team, and then we'll see if we have questions collectively.
Thank you. Pass over to Mr. Hodges.
So thanks for the opportunity to speak to the submission today. My name is Corey Hodges, and I am the General Manager of TNZ Grown Products. TNZ is a Southland-based company involved with the production of peat-based products for the wholesale to the horticulture and landscape ministries within New Zealand and Australia. Our submission on the proposal water plan focuses on the wetland modification rule 74. Part of our business is based on the modification of wetlands. We are not opposed to the regulation of wetland modification, but consider there should be recognisation in the rules of the plan that modification may be appropriate in certain circumstances. We have sought a change in rule 74 in addition of the new policy. This will provide this. As our submission and inherent evidence has been recirculated, and read, I will not repeat any of it today. I would, however, be happy to answer any questions the panel may have.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Pam York, and I'm here representing the Scobie Family Trust, which is a landowner of the MEP. I'm not sure if you can bring it up on there or.
Yep.
In your submission?
Yeah,
very last one.
Which is in the company, Scobie's Transport is the company that harvests off that peat area.
It's Crump Road.
So currently you can see the area that we're harvesting off at the moment, a lot of that area of the lands, and in the next 5 years, probably a quarter of that will need to be retired as they are probably past their... This end here, they've basically just about run out of the peat we're harvesting at the moment. So it was sort of timely that these submissions come up because we would be looking to want to try and get resource consent to do some open up another area with this wetland here, and these proposed rule changes are going to allow us to do that. Now there is a lot of this area that we've already looked at in this wetland that doesn't have a lot of ecological value. It already has a lot of wild and rowans and other weed species growing through that. And realistically, if we don't get the ability to be able to do something with that area, realistically we won't be able to carry on that business component of what we do. So at the end of the day, we'll probably, because that's the only bit of land that we own through here and up around here, not all that to that side of ours is ours. You know, realistically it has no value to us. And we certainly wouldn't be looking at spending a lot of money to do anything with it. We'd probably just be locking the gates and walking away, to be fair. So as Luke has mentioned, it's really quite important to us that we get some ability to be able to at least go through a process of doing something with Rule 74 in a wetland area that does not have a lot of ecological value. We'll go through that process to prove that.
Okay, are you happy if we move to questions now?
Yep.
Okay, Lloyd, we'll start at your end of the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to get a better understanding, I presume that that's basically a bun or a knob of peat, is that correct?
No, they're both high moor bogs, yep. So they're classed as a high moor, so they're above ground or above the surrounding lower lying areas.
And how deep is that peat?
The TMZ operation goes anywhere up to 6 metres, I presume yours is probably similar.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, 6-8 metres in depth, always higher in the centre.
So, just out of interest, when do you know when to go and when do you know when to stop? So in other words, when you actually start into the mound.
So the harvesting is very, very seasonal. So you need dry weather. So normally you start towards the end of October, start of November. The season with the current weather patterns might run on till, say, April if you're really, really lucky. Very weather dependent and wind. You need a lot of wind to dry the property because a lot of the, once they're opened up like that, you can't even walk on them in the winter time. You would sink to your knees. So we run big tractors and trailers and heavy equipment, which is why the drainage is all through the site. Every 25 metres there's normally a ditch that just lets the water run off to a catchment area. So yeah, that's the season. So it's a very short 6 week, a 6 month window.
So just picking up your point on Rule 74, how would you know the different types of peat, or how would you argue that there are different types of peat and some should be left and some should be harvested?
It's not so much the different types of peat, it's what's above the ground as far as the vegetation and what's left there, and it's a lot of the peat bogs that aren't opened up are gorse and need treated, so it's more on those lines, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and a lot of the new area that you go into, you have to remove that top layer of very heavy thatch or bracken or whatever's on it, and to get down to that layer. So it's a process that takes a long time, because then you have to drain that area to get the ability to get on it, because all those lands have all got ditches on either side of them, you see. So there's quite a process to get them to that usable state.
Okay, thank you.
Here. Yeah. Interesting. So you're saying that one part of this you're going to have to retire? Is
yes.
That because you've got them too low and it's too
No,
low?
Well, they sort of tend to run out. So, yes, I mean, it's probably been, we haven't been homed it the whole time, but it's probably been harvested for 30 years. So we know now that the advantage, there's not a lot of advantage going back onto those lands, you know, for what you get off them. So basically, yes, there's no advantage. So we will be retiring them, probably filling in the ditches and going back to maybe a grass state or something like that. So if it gets to a point where the peat does get to a non-usable level.
The closer you get to the clay, the peat becomes a lot finer and there's a lot of stick in it.
Right.
So it becomes...
So what do you do to repatriate that so that it doesn't look like a scar? Do you do anything, or do you just...
The TMZ operations there, both peat bogs will be reinstated into farmland again and sold on. So both of them are in the middle of farmland, and a consent allows us to go down to that surrounding lower land. So we will replant grass, put lime into it, get the pH back up, because it's quite acidic, very acidic as it sits there at the moment. So that's what we'll do with ours. I don't know what you'll do with yours.
Yeah, and the problem is you've got to get a topsoil base or something back on them, because you can't, grass doesn't really like growing in peat. So it's a time, it takes a bit of time too, but basically when I say we reinstate them, we just won't be using them. I mean, we won't be going back and harvesting off them, and as we get products available, they'll be spread back along there to work down eventually. Because even this area here is marginal. We grassed it and that sort of thing, but it's the same thing. You can only really go on it in the height of summer. It's all right around here, but the minute you start going down there, you run into trouble. So, and it's not realistically an area you could be, well, for us animals, because we're not farming around it. That's all that land lease is. So, but it would probably go back into a grass brace and you would just cut grass off it or something. Particular time of year, you've got to pick and choose. But it is very hungry. You need to put a lot of lime.
So, supposing you can't get a consent to extend, and that's going to happen everywhere in New Zealand if you can't, what happens in the industry?
Good question. They are already importing
peat
product into the country, which is a little bit ridiculous, but it does, you know, Russian stuff, all, you know, it comes into Auckland that now. So they'll just
so up around the Baltic States, Europe, there's a lot of imported product coming in. We have a customer that also purchases 50% off us and 50% off the Europeans, and already in the last 12 months he's had containers turned away due to seed contamination coming in from Europe. The MPI got a hold of that, turned the product away. So and it seems to be happening more and more frequently, so I would imagine eventually the borders may be closed, tightened up a bit more, which would stop the imported of peat products, which would then cause problems to the New Zealand horticulture industry, really, because it's predominantly used for all the growing right through all the nurseries and all the seedlings, and 70% of stuff growing in New Zealand would be in peat.
Thank you.
Container's not able to be fumigated.
Pardon?
The container's not able to be fumigated.
No, they found seed. It was like a deep product that they couldn't fumigate. Yeah. So they, believe it or not, sent it to Australia, and Australia accepted it.
Oh, that's nice. So share the love.
So besides TNL and Scobie, is there other?
There's another one in Southland, and another operation of a smaller scale in Southland, and then there's another one operating in the North Island, and that's it. There have been a lot of them over the years with a lot of different areas, but it's quite difficult. Very low margin, high volume type of arrangement, as you can imagine. So there's a few falling by the wayside, aren't there? There's only the three of us left now, really.
So that down at the bottom of that photo, those what are they? Waterways of some sort there, are they natural or?
Down here?
There.
No, that's our collecting ponds where we have main ditches that run around, and part of our code of compliance is we have collecting ponds for sediment before they discharge now.
So that's just natural water table?
Well, no, it's been made from this area here, from where we drained those lands, so they come around the side and we've got settling ponds sort of need to collect that. Peat's a horrible product, really. You know, blows and it just rolls and.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Luke, I'm just looking at your proposed rule 74 with the changes that you recommend. There are two things, really. One is that would the changes that you proposed mean that other wetlands, which may not be regionally significant, but might, you know, cumulatively, would that put them at a greater risk of being developed? Converted into farmland,
Councillor, well, I think the key thing is it's still regulated as a discretionary activity, any wetland modification. So there's still a process that would have to go through.
Yeah.
The regionally significant is an appendix in the plan that lists those. Potentially that could be added to over time. I still have some reservations about even that, because I can think of scenarios where a regionally significant wetland might need some minor modification for other reasons. But that would still provide, through a non-compliant consent process, that would, I guess, potentially you could get that. It's just when you go back to policy 33 and the words prevent the reduction in, it makes it difficult to meet that policy test of for a non-complying activity, the two gateway tests, and then on top of that the adverse effects test, no more than minor, and you don't actually, there's no allowance in that for the positive effects of that modification, if for example it was for a large infrastructure project. So that's the sort of I think it could potentially, over the life of the plan, be a problematic rule, even though I can sort of understand where it's coming from.
why did you remove the words out of B? Did you do that?
I did, yes. Well, because the B basically I've amended it, is a catch-all rule for any wetland modification other than an A, whereas previously it was only capturing modification where it was associated with enhancing pedestrian access.
Okay, so the other question, Mr. Chairman, if I may, is I'm not sure if this would be scope for this, but I'm asking you, if you think as an alternative, would be to specify the wetlands that TNZ is concerned about and have them sort of sitting outside this rule. So you could specify by describing where they were, that would allow the continued harvesting until they were finished, but then that would retain the intention of the policy of the rule as it is, but allow TNZ to continue until they run out, basically, of these places that would be specified.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman. In theory, I think that would work, but at this stage, I'm not sure TNZ. They're extracting on the existing bogs that are consented. I'm not sure, Corey could speak to this, I'm not sure they've identified future sites or are looking at those. So that's more
future-proofing what we're going to do. So we have consents at the moment that are in place for the next 20 years, but for this business to be sustainable, we're going to need something past that point. So we need to start planning ahead. We need a good 5-year period once we open up a new property to get it to the condition that we can actually start harvesting it. So we, at the moment, we are not looking, but I would imagine we will need to.
And I think just further to that, the rule, if that was a regionally significant wheat and someone was looking at modified this rule, it's still non-compliant activity.
Yeah.
So it's quite a stringent test to get through, which is sort of a signal to anyone looking at doing that. Whereas there may be other wetlands out there that have already been highly modified, but there's that broad general definition of wetland, which does capture all wetlands.
Yeah. Okay, so that's not really a solution. Okay, thanks very much.
So I just got a couple of questions. You say you've got consents in place for your existing operations for the next 20 years. Is that for all of the operations that you described?
Just the TNZ, the two TNZ sites.
Okay. And when were those consents granted? Do you recall?
They were renewed 2 years ago, right? From memory. Was it? Yeah, 3 years ago.
So they would have been renewed after the MPS 20, MPS at least the earlier one was released.
So yes, that'd be correct. It might be.
Interesting.
What's the latest one? 2014.
Yeah, the initial one was 2010s, and I can't remember.
I think it was probably after the latest one.
After the 2014 one.
Yeah.
So they got through that process.
Just to clarify, those consents were replacement consents for stormwater discharge.
Oh, just stormwater discharge. Thank you.
And probably the other point on that is there's often land use consents or older mining consents that relate to some of these extraction sites dating back to the 1970s.
Yeah. Okay, I just had two questions arising from the planning evidence. The section 42A report at paragraph 11.1 says that there's been such a large reduction in wetland extent within Southland, which that indicates the potential that virtually all remaining wetlands in the Southland region could be considered significant. Do you have any technical evidence to present to us that would lead us to a different conclusion?
Technical from a planning perspective?
No, you're a planner, so you would need to rely on technical evidence. Is there any technical evidence that you can point us to that would lead us to a different conclusion?
No.
I just wanted to ask you about the MPS FM. And I wanted to ask you about Objective A2. Do you have a copy of that with you?
Yes, I do.
So I'd like to ask you about Objective A2, capital A2, little b, and just if you could explain how the relief being sought is consistent with that.
Yeah, Well, the relief sort still provides for a regulatory process for modification of wetlands through a consent, resource consent process. So in my mind, it provides the ability to assess the significant values of any particular wetland that's proposed to be modified. And potentially that can be linked back to objectives around quality of fresh water.
So that would have to assume that all remaining wetlands in Southland were not significant. Because if they were, then the only way you can protect those values is by declining such an application.
Well, I can't.
Because it says protecting the values, it doesn't say mitigating or avoiding, or it says protecting. Protecting is pretty onerous.
Well, I couldn't give a. Obviously, I'm not qualified to give an answer to the earlier question around the significance. But I guess I have commented around the range and types of wetland.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you about objective B4, but I guess the answer would be the same.
Yes.
All right, now that was all I wanted to clarify, so thank you very much for coming in and presenting your material to us. We'll adjourn now and reconvene at 9 in the morning.